holding on page Mem in Brachos, Ois Nuntes. Last time we learned about, we had Machlokas of Ben Zoyma and the Chachamim, whether you're going to have to say, whether we're still going to be mentioning the mitzvah, whether we're still going to be mentioning Yetzias Mitzrayim, Lo'asid Lavoi, or we're going to say that it's going to be so overshadowed by the later Nisim that it's not going to be as important. So in that connection, so we mentioned a pasuk that says Lo Yomu Oid, but the answer is Lav Davka. That means the Chachamim said doesn't mean that Yetzias Mitzrayim is going to be completely necker. Just means that it'll be tougher. It won't be as important, but we'll still be mentioning it. The same way, for example, as when we say Lo Yikore Oid Shimcha Yaakov, it doesn't mean that Yaakov will never be called Yaakov again. It means that from now on his main name is Yisrael, and his secondary name is still Yaakov. Yisrael Ikur Yaakov Tofel Lo. So now the Gemara says, good, let's talk about that point, about that the name Yaakov is Tofel, unlike that the name Yaakov is Tofel, unlike, for example, so we find Avram hu Avraham. We find that the Pasuk in Divrei Yamim, when it summarizes the genealogies, the family trees that we have throughout Sefer Bereishis, and it says there, Avram is Avraham. So why would the point is, B'tchila Nasa Avla Avram. Originally, he was called Avram in this week's parasha because he was a father only to Aram, because that was where he grew up. And that he was their father. He was the ruchniistic father in that he taught them about Elikus. All of a sudden, Nasa Avla Chol Olam Kulay, in the end, he became the father of the whole world. And therefore, that's why the hay was added, that now he became, as we have at the end of this week's parasha, Av HaMoin Goy. Eitz Yosef quotes over here from Rashi on the pasuk that nevertheless, even though Ab Hamoin Goyim doesn't have a resh in it, nevertheless the resh was kept, because after all we find that even the Yud of Sarai's name complains, how much more so the resh would have complained, so therefore it was left in. There's a sicha someplace where the Rebbe talks about the idea that the deeper idea behind it is that when Avraham is starting his new role as Av L'chol Olam Kulay, he shouldn't forget about the ones that he was in, that he was working, that he was poil with all this time. He shouldn't forget about Aram and think they're less important because he have the whole rest of the world to deal with. So the point is, therefore, so we're saying Avram hu Avraham, that's why his name was changed, to show his new role. Marsha also refers to a Gemara in Nedarim, which we'll be getting to in a few weeks in Daf Yomi, Best Hashem, which explains also that it means that his mazel was changed as well. Like this, as Avram, he was childless. As Avraham, then he has a new mazel, and therefore he's able to have a child. In fact, Marsha says that's also what it means. Another meaning is that he was Avla Aram. So what happens from him while he's still Avram at age 86, he becomes the father of Yishmael, and Yishmael is only one individual nation. So he is Taka, the father, but only of one individual nation, namely Yishmael. And later on, when he becomes Avraham, he becomes Av HaMoin Goyim, meaning that he becomes the father of the Jewish people, where every Shevet is called a nation of its own. Goyu Kal Goyim Yemimecha, every Shevet, every one of the 12 Shvatim is counted as a nation of its own. So therefore, that's the significance of now that he's Av HaMoin Goyim. Till now, he was capable of fathering only a Goy, Yishmael, and the one nation that would come from him, now is capable of fathering a Jewish nation. And same thing, Sarai, he's Sora, the same thing. Now, you don't have a pasuk that says this, but still, we know that originally she was called Sarai, and then she gets renamed to Sora, because the same thing, but Chila Nasa, Sarai L'Umasa, originally she was only the Sarai, means my princess. So at first, she was the princess only for her nation. Later on, she becomes the princess, the noble woman for the entire world. So that's the significance of her name change. And again, the idea is, Marshall says, same idea. It would mean only the people who knew her while she was alive, she would be a princess to them. But as soon as she dies, she didn't have children. Therefore, her name would be forgotten. Everything about her would be forgotten. Now her mazel was changed. Now she becomes a sora for the whole world because, in fact, the Jewish people that came from her, the pasuk says on them in Tilim, Tishisemer l'sorim b'chol ha'aretz. The Jewish people will become noblemen throughout the entire world. Primarily, this is talking about Limos HaMashiach. And in fact, he points out the name Yisrael also has the idea of sar in it for the same reason. So therefore, so that's what it means. That's the significance of the fact that her name was changed to Sarah. So the Gemara continues, Tony Bakapara, Kola Kore La Avraham Avram Over Be'eset. from then on, from when his name was changed, anybody who calls Avraham, who calls him Avram, is over on an Eser Shenem of Ahoy Yashimcha Avraham. Namely, the Pasuk says in this parasha, your name will be Avraham. So from now on, anybody who calls him Avram is being over on that. Rabbi Lazar, or Eliezer, Omer over the lab. Rabbi Lazar, or Rabbi Eliezer says not only he's over on actually on a lab, Shenema, because the, earlier in that pasuk it says, V'lo yikore oides Shimcha Avram. From now, your name will no longer be called Avram. So therefore, that constitutes a loisesser. So the Rif discusses over here in some detail, so why do the two opinions, why does the Tanakhama mention, why does Bakapara mention only the Esser? What is he doing with the words lo yikore oides Shimcha Avram? And vice versa, what is Rabbi Lazar or Rabbi Eliezer doing with Bakapara's half of the pasuk? So he has a long explanation that each one of them would say that each one of them would say that that the other half of the pasuk is not a separate mitzvah. It's just that it's giving us information because you're Avhamon Goyim. Therefore, it's inappropriate for you to be called Avram anymore. From now on, it's appropriate for you to be called Avraham, but that doesn't constitute a lav according to Bakapara, only an SN. Rabbi Lazar would say the other way around. It's an interesting point. Maharsha points out that none of the poskim bring this as an actual mitzvah. First of all, Maharsha says they're not necessarily arguing. They may both agree. Bakapara is bringing an esser. Rabbi Lazar is bringing a lois esser. They may, in fact, be both agreeing that there is an esser and a lois esser involved. So he points out, you don't really have the poskim don't mention this. They don't count it as one of the 600. They don't count them as two of the 613 mitzvahs. The only one after the Maharsha's times, the Magen Avraham mentions it in Simen Kuf Nun Vav in Shulchan Aruch, which is Hilchos Maaser Umatan. So the Magen Avraham uses that as an opportunity to discuss the basics of a number of dinim that are not brought elsewhere in Shulchan Aruch. For example, there's no place in Shulchan Aruch for dinim of Lashon Hara. There's no dinim, there's no place anywhere in Shulchan Aruch. We have a number of other basic dinim that a person needs to know for whatever reason. They're not in the Torah and they're not in the Shulchan Aruch. So the Magen Avraham takes the opportunity in Simen Kuf Nun Vav and discusses them. So he mentions this one over there also. But other than that, he was 100 years after the Maharsha. So the Maharsha wonders, he says, Tzorech Iyun. The Tzlach actually says one possibility is because this Braisa, Bar Kapara and Rabbi Lazar may actually be disagreeing with the other Braisa. The previous Braisa that we said, B'tchila Nasa Avla Aram, is saying, you know what? It's inappropriate to call him Avram anymore because now his role has been expanded. Now he's Avraham. And the same thing with Sarai and Sarah. But not necessarily according to that first statement that it would constitute an actual lav and esser. Fine, Bar Kapara and Rabbi Lazar are saying that it is, but not necessarily the poskim may have held that the halacha is like the previous braisa, and therefore that's not actually an esser and a lois esser. Or they might say it's an asmachta, etc. Maharsha also explains, so taka why it is. What taka why is it? Now we're going to go on to say that with Yaakov, we said before, and we're going to go on to say that with Yaakov, it's not like that. Having had his name changed to Yisrael, he still keeps the name Yaakov, and it's legitimate to call him that. So taka, what's the deeper reason for the difference? And for that matter, by Sarah. Even by Sarah, we're not saying that even according to Bakapara and Rabbi Lazar, a person calls Sarah Sarai, he's not over on anything. Only with Avram, uniquely, are they saying that there's an essay and a lois essay involved. What's the difference? So he says like this. What's the reason? We said, why did Hashem change Avram's name? To show that he's not going to be able to have a son to Yashin him. So now, from now on, if we call him Avram, then we're taking away, we're reducing we're saying that there's a reduction in that koyach eliki that Hashem gave him the ability to be Av Hamoin Goy. And we can't do that. We can't express any such idea that there's a diminution in that. When it comes to Yaakov, what is it? The name Yisrael is given to him because Kisarisa Malakim, that you now became important, you overpowered a Malach, and you overpowered people, and you're a nobleman, etc. So therefore, so if we still call him Yaakov, all we're saying is that fine, we're saying he has a lower name and he has a higher name. There's a name that's used for him when he's in a lowly state, when the Jewish people who come from him are in a lowly state, and we call them Yaakov and Lashon Akev. And then you have Yisrael as the primary name to show the greatness of him and of the Jewish people. So therefore, now Maharsha goes on to say, when it comes to Sarah, also the same idea. The change from Sarai to Sarah is just the difference. We're saying that now she's not just a noble woman for one nation, but for the entire world. Well, with Avraham, after all, there is Avraham himself thought. He says at the end of this week's parasha, Lu Yishmael Yichel Afanecha. You're giving me a promise to me that I'm going to have a son at 100. Isn't it enough that Yishmael should live in front of you? That he should be a Yorei Elokim? And the Ebeshter tells him, no, you're going to have Yitzchak. So therefore, if we continue to call Avraham Avram, then it means that we might be misled into thinking that, in fact, Hashem's promise is accomplished through Yishmael. And that's not so. Whereas Sarah, she's not the mother of Yishmael anyway. The only child she ever had was Yitzchak. Therefore, there's not such an Easter calling her Sarai, because you're not going to be misled into thinking that there's some other child of hers through whom Hashem's promise is taking place. In Chassidus, in various places, it talks about other angles on that. There's the idea, for example, that Yaakov represents the avoda of the Balei Tshuva and Yisrael of the Tzaddikim, and we need both types of avoda. There's the idea that the avoda of Yaakov is a prerequisite for the avoda of Yisrael. There's all kinds of explanations up in Chassidus about why it is that both those names exist. Whereas with Avraham, we're saying once he was named Avraham, we never call him Avram again. Because that represents a type of avoda that now at this point has been set aside and is no longer valid and is being replaced by a whole different kind of avoda. So the Gemara says, Elameyata. So again, by that logic, if you're saying, because it says Vahoya Shimcha Avraham or Velo Yikora Oda Shimcha Avraham, then those constitute an essay and a loisese to not call him Avram. Elameyata, by that logic, Akoda la Sora Sorai Hochinami. Are you going to say the same thing is true if a person calls Sora Sorai afterwards? Because after all, Hashem renamed her. And the answer is no. Because there, all it is Hashem is telling Avraham personally, you should not call her Sarai, because her name is Sarah, but that doesn't constitute a lav for everybody else. If anybody else were to call her Sarai, then there's not a lav involved. And again, Marusha, based on Marusha's reason, because there's nothing that you can be misled into thinking if you call her Sarai, thinking that there's some other child of hers that Hashem is going to establish as bris and establish as his amanivchar other than Yitzchak, because that was her only child anyhow. So the Gemara asks, Elameata akorele Yaakov hachinami. So if you're going to say that when a person is renamed and it doesn't say when you don't have the expression loy sikra by Yaakov, also you have the expression that loy yikore oid shimcha Yaakov, similar to lo yikore oid shimcha Avraham. So what's the difference? So by Yaakov, if you call him Yaakov Hochinami, you're going to say the same thing you oivan alav. The answer is shiny hosim de hodra hadre kra. The difference is because there you have psukim themselves that return them, that call him Yaakov even after the fact. Dichtiv, vayomer elekim li Yisrael b'maris halayla, vayomer Yaakov. Right there, he's named with both names in the pasuk, where first he's called Yisrael, and then Hashem addresses him as Yaakov, showing that he still has the name and the level of avoda of Yaakov. And again, there's the general idea that Yaakov represents the lower when the Jewish people are in a lowlier state, and Yisrael when they're in a higher state. Yisrael, all over the place, it talks about Chassidus. Yisrael is Li Roish, and so on and so forth, and therefore it represents the Jewish people on a higher level as opposed to Yaakov, which is Yud Oki. Okay, so the Gemara says, Mosi Rabbi Yosi Ba'ovin, V'tein. By the way, in that pasuk, Vayemer Elokim Yisrael Amaris Halayla, Vayemer Yaakov, in that connection, Rav Shamshon Ufal Hirsch actually has an interesting comment on it in his Pirush on Chumash. He says the vort is that Yisrael, he figures he's going down to Mitzrayim as Yisrael. He doesn't know that they're going down for Shibud. As far as he knows, he's going down there. They're honored guests of the Egyptian state. His son is Dr. Viceroy and everything. The Eibishter addresses him, Yaakov, Yaakov. Realize that's not all you're going in for. There's a lot of hardship coming up. And then therefore, yeah. So in fact, a couple of psukim later, also you have by Yisu b'nei Yisrael as Yaakov Abihem. He says the same kind of idea. At this point, Yaakov knows what they're getting into, but b'nei Yisrael, that his children, didn't yet. So they're still thinking of him as Yisrael, but they're lifting up Yaakov Abihem because he at this point knew what they're going into. Anyway, the Gemara says, Mosir Rabbi Yosef Ba'ovin, V'itamer Rabbi Yosef, but V'itamer Rabbi Yosef Ba'zvida. So Rabbi Yosef Ba'ovin or Rabbi Yosef Ba'zvida asks, you do have a pasuk afterwards where the name Avram is used once more for Avraham. We say it every day in davening. It's a pasuk from Nehemiah. Atahu Hashem ha'alekim Hashem b'charta ba'Avram. You are Hashem ha'alekim who chose Avram. But it says him u'kastim, and you took him out of u'kastim v'samt Shmei Avraham, and you made his name Avraham. So there we have one time when he isn't called Avram afterwards. Omalei. So he answers him, whoever it is, one of the Chachamim, answered Rabbi Yossi, Hosam Novi who to come aside of the Shvacha de Rachmana, my to have him Ikra. Because there it's not, we're not calling him Avram. We're describing the chesed of Hashem that you chose him while his name was still Avram, and you brought him to Eretz Yisrael and you renamed him Abraham. So that's not calling him Abraham. That's just mentioning again that what Hashem accomplished for him when he was still called Avram. And therefore, that's not over on it. Amnaf Yosef, by the way, points out why we're calling it Novi to come a Sadr or the Shivacha de Rachmana. You look in the Psukim over there, it's Leviim that were saying they were having a whole gathering of the Jewish people to do tshuva and to beg Hashem for Rachmanus. And it's names over there, the Leviim, who were saying this tefillah, and they weren't Nevi. The Pashtus, I guess the answer would be it wasn't only them, it was the Anshek Nes Sagdola in general. And as the Rambam tells us, the Anshek Nes Sagdola included a number of Nevi. Okay. Hoyakoda Perak Sheni, so the second parak of Brachas continues with the dinim of Krishma. In the middle of the Mishnah over there, so first the Mishnah starts talking about about a couple of dinim of interrupting in the middle of Krishma, and then it continues, Omra Bishoban Korcha, Loma Kodma Parashas Shema Lebahoyim Shemaya. Why is the parasha of Shema placed before Vahoyim Shemaya? A bunch of the Mephoshim ask. Of course it is. It actually comes before it in the Torah. Shema is in Parshas Vayeshanan, V'hoyim Shemaya is in Parshas Ekev. What kind of a question is that? So Tosfos, which is not printed here in Ein Yaakov, but it's printed in the Gemara, says the point of the question sits us even before both of them. It's in Parshas Shlach, it's in Chumash Bamidbar. And we see that it's not. So therefore, once we see that they're out of order, then we have a right to ask why is Shema dafka first. Marsha says a different point. Given that, we're not just saying Krishma, we're saying it with a brachas before and after it, which means that we're saying it as a tefillah. So usually we should have things that are said b'loshen rabim should be said first. V'hoyim shemaya is phrased in the plural. Im shemaya tishmu'u el mitzvesaya asher nechem mitzave eschem hayoim, etc. The whole thing is phrased in loshen rabim. So that ought to go before Shema, which is only b'loshen yachid. So the answer is Kadeshi Kabbal Ul Malchus Shemayim Tchila, because first a person should accept on himself the yoke of Malchus Shemayim, which is in Shema, Va'achakach Yikabbal Ul Mitzvahs, then he should accept the yoke of Mitzvahs. Shema focuses on, it has Mitzvahs in it, Kshautim Lo'isay Yodecha, etc., but primarily it's focusing on accepting the yoke of Hashem's kingship. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, is an acceptance of Hashem's kingship. Ad Kedei Kach, by the way, that we have in Malchus and Rosh Hashanah, we use it as the 10th Pasuk of Malchus. Because
a person could do the mitzvahs
could be doing the mitzvahs without Kabbalah's Eo Malchus Shemayim, therefore you need it in that order. There are a number of places in Chassidus where it talks about a deeper idea behind that, is that, for example, there's a mimer of the Rebbe Maharash that develops the idea that Kabbalah's Eo Malchus Shemayim Tchila means to have the sense of Mesiras Nefesh that should permeate your mitzvahs. Now, you're not going to actually go on Mesiras Nefesh necessarily, but still, you're going to have the mitzvahs that follow it, even though those mitzvahs are going to be with a gvul, they're going to be with an approach of Mesiras Nefesh. There are other places, they're going to be permeated with an idea of Mesiras Nefesh. With an approach of Mesiras Nefesh. In other words, that even though the person knows there is a limitation to this mitzvah, there's a certain limit how large the mitzvah should be or how much I should be giving, etc. But still it's gonna be completely permeated through and shot through with the idea of Mesiras Nefesh that came first from Kabbalah Eo Malchus Shemayim. There's other places, there's Maimonim of the Rebbe that talk about the idea that also Kabbalah's Eo Malchus Shemayim means that the person feels a sense of rotzoi, but also shoiv, where he realizes the Eibishter doesn't just want his neshama to tear itself out of his body. The Eibishter wants his neshama to stay in the guf and then to accomplish mitzvahs. And now with that mentality, now he's ready for Kabbalah's Eo mitzvahs. So therefore, that's the order first Shema, then Vahoyim Shemayim.
I forgot what it's called.
His Sefer Noam Elimelech, yeah.
I think he talks about central content, something like mm-hmm. where it talks about a person should be willing. He should in the middle of doing some sort of pleasure activity of pleasure within the limits of Torah.
Mm-hmm.
He should be willing to give it his life over to be most nefesh mamish in the
Yeah, and that's you have stories. So along those lines of what Rebbe Lemelech is saying, that in the middle of a person's work, you should be ready to do Gar Mesiras Nefesh. Al Derech like that, you have the story with one of the Alter Rebbe's Chassidim, Rebbe Yamin Pletzker, where he's figuring out his account books, figuring out adding up everything, and then he writes up the total at the bottom of there is Einoid Milvad. And they ask him, how do you do such a thing? That's no way to run a business. And he says, listen, you know, sometimes it happens. The person's in the middle of davening and he starts thinking about the fair in Leipzig. So there's nothing wrong if the other way around, the person's in the middle of figuring out his account books and he thinks of Einoid Milvado. So yeah, that fits very well with that idea.
So let's say you're saying Krishna, you have in mind, be Moser Nefesh to the extent of giving your life.
So there is the idea of Limso Nafshe Be'echod. There is the idea that when a person is saying Echod, particularly, he should have in mind that of Mesiras Nefesh, particularly we say, for example, when we say Shema by Ne'ilah, especially there's that idea that's printed in the Machzer that a person should consider as though he's ready to go on Mesiras Nefesh, and Eibishter will count that. Machshav HaTovah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Metzayer for the Ma'aseh. So, yeah.
So the Rebbe Akiva felt that all the time.
Yeah. What?
He felt that every time he said Shema.
So maybe Rabbi Akiva felt that all the time. Call it your call, Yom Yisim Itzna. Right. Yeah. Okay. Next, the Mishnah continues. Rabbi Yeshua ben Kofa continues. V'hoyem Shemayu l'Vayomer. Why does V'hoyem Shemayu come before Vayomer? Again, given that Vayomer is much earlier in the Torah. And the reason is V'hoyem Shemayu noig ben Vayem b'melayla, because V'hoyem Shemayu is referring to mitzvahs that apply both by day and by night. It talks about Talmud Torah in particular, which is V'hoyem b'melayla. Whereas Vayomer applies only by day, because the mitzvah that it's talking about is tzitzis, and tzitzis is only yon chayiv and tzitzis by day. Marsha also adds over here, each parasha of Shema refers to a different fundamental principle of Yiddishkeit. Now you have like this, the Rambam we know famously wrote that there are 13 ikrim. The Sefer Ikrim argued with the Rambam on that, and said not all of those are ikrim, some of those are outgrowths from primary ikrim. And the Sefer Ikrim in particular identifies three basic ikrim of Yiddishkeit, and then all the other ones are outgrowths of those. There is that there's an Eibishter, that he gave Torah and Hashemayim, and that there's Schar V'Onesh. So for example, the Rambam has a number of ikrim, that there's only that Hashem exists, that there's only one of him, that he doesn't have a goof, etc. So the Sefer Ikrim says all of those are outgrowths. You have to believe that there's an Eibishter there. Then what is the nature, so to speak, of Hashem is that there's only one and he doesn't have a goof and so forth. So in fact, he says, when you think about it, these basic concepts, Lahavdil, other religions have their own spin on them as well. You know, the Christians, the Marshall, also have a concept that there's an Eibish there. Just they have a flawed conception of him. And the same thing, Torah and Hashemayim, and so forth. Anyway, so therefore, you have three basic ideas. So Parashas Shema is that Hashem exists and is one. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Therefore, that's the first one of those things. V'hoyem Shemaya is to recognize and to acknowledge that Hashem gave us Torah and Hashemayim, and it contains mitzvahs that we have to keep. And the third one, Vayomer Shemaya, Vayomer, it talks about Schar Va'onesh, because we talked about, it mentions Yetzias Mitzrayim, Ani Hashem Elokeichem Asher Yetzias Chametz Mitzrayim, which therefore reminds us about Schar Va'onesh. So all of those three fundamentals of Yiddishkeit are encapsulated in Shema. We talked about last week also something from the Yerushalmi that Tosfos refers to, that all the Aseret HaDibros are hinted at here and there throughout the three parashiyos of Shema. Sefer Ikrim was written by Rabbi Yosef Albo. He was a late Rishon in Spain before the expulsion. So he's a couple hundred years after the Rambam. What happened was, actually, in his times, here and there, we know throughout the Middle Ages, the Goyim would force Chachamim to debate with them. We know famously that Ramban went through that. So Rabbi Yosef was part of a team of Chachamim, where also in the early 1400s, the church forced them into one of these kinds of debates. So afterwards, Rabbi Yosef realized, you know, we need a good sefer for that everybody can understand, that will encapsulate what taka are we arguing about. We have a Torah, we have a Yiddishkeit that we're trying to defend against these guys. What does it actually mean? And so he wrote Sefer Ikrim to explain all those points.
The second
parasha of Shema does include Schar Va'onesh, of course, but nevertheless, we can still say that it focuses more on the mitzvahs that we have to do. Okay, So now the Gemara says, this actually is earlier in the Gemara, this is actually at the end of the first paragraph. We talked about over there a few things that the Chachamim thought to put in Krishma, but they didn't in the end. We said they wanted to put in the Aseret HaDibros, but the Goyim are going to claim and try to mislead the Amoratzim into thinking that only the Aseret HaDibros come from Hashem. We said they wanted to put in Parshas Balak, but it would be too long. It would be too much of a tircha for people. So the question is now, the Gemara says, Parshas Tzitzis, mipnei makvo ur b'krishma. Taka, why did the Chachamim set that specifically Parshas Tzitzis out of all the places that, it, now we said, you have to mention Maskir and Tzitzis Mitzrayim Balelis, fine. So you have to have a parasha that mentions Tzitzis Mitzrayim, which Shema and Vahoyim Shema Yadon. But why davka the parasha of Tzitzis? And particularly, Mephoshim explained, the question is really more on the nighttime Shema. Given that at night, all you have to do is mention Tzitzis Mitzrayim. You're not Mela by day, you're wearing Tzitzis. So fine, you have to mention it. But by night, you're anyway not Chayiv in Tzitzis. So why dafka that parasha? And the answer is, Amar Rav Yehuda bar Chaviva, mipnei sheyesh bo shisha uchamisha dvarim, because there are five or six fundamental things in it. Now, the Gemara is actually going to list six. Marsha mentioned the printed Gemaras have the word Chamisha, which is why also we have it here in square brackets, because that in general throughout Ein Yaakov, whenever you have something in parenthesis, means that was the Ein Yaakov's original Girsa, was the Machaber's original Girsa, and then the later printers corrected it to make it match, to correct it, or maybe corrected with scare quotes, whatever, to make it match the printed Gemaras. A lot of times his Neskhois are better, actually, but anyway. So when I end up listing six things, so Marsha says, okay, maybe what it is one of the, it brings different gersois. Maybe one of these things is not actually mentioned in the Gemara, or maybe what it is one of them is combined together with another one. Anyway, the Mechaber of Ein Yaakov himself had a gersa in front of him that says six. And therefore, each one is an individual thing. Mitzvah Tzitzis, number one, has the actual mitzvah of Tzitzis. Yitzias Mitzrayim, oil mitzvahs. It has Yitzias Mitzrayim, it has the yoke of mitzvahs, which, yes, that's mentioned also in Vahoyim Shemaya, but it's reinforced now in Vayomer. Va'apikursus, it also has a warning against apikursus, against denying Hashem, or Rashi uses the expression, goyim who distort the living words of Hashem and claim that they mean something else. So Parashas Tzitzis has a warning against that. Hirhu Aveira, a warning against not thinking thoughts of Aveira. V'hir Avodas Kechavim, and a warning against thinking thoughts of Avodah Zarah. So because it has all those six fundamental things in it, is why the Chachamim found it appropriate that we should say it every time we say Shema. So the Gemara asks, Bishleim Ahani Tzlas Mepharshan. The first three we see easily enough, clearly in the Pesukim. Oil mitzvahs dichtivar isamoysu is chartim as kol mitzvahs Hashem. We're saying that you remember all the mitzvahs of Hashem by looking at the tzitzis. So the first three we easily enough see. Where do we see any hint of the other three in the parasha of Tzitzis? And the answer is Ella apikursus hiravera so that's the question. Ella apikursus hiravera chabminolon. And the answer is Detanya. In fact, we do have them as we see in a brisa. That when it says achre levavchem, when the Torah warns you don't follow after your heart, zu apikursus, that refers to thoughts of apikursus, namely of denying that Hashem exists, to denying fundamental things of Yiddishkeit, b'cheinu omer novel b'libei ein elokim, as we find in the pasuk that the novel, the degenerate person or the foolish person, or whoever it's translated exactly, says in his heart that there's no God. So therefore, we see that that kind of thought, that Hashem, that Chas V'Shalom, that Hashem doesn't exist, or any other distortion of Torah, is associated with the heart. So Achrei Levavchem means don't entertain such ideas in your heart. Achrei Nechem, when it says don't follow your eyes, Zuhir Aveira, that means thinking thoughts of Aveira, and particularly in the Gemara, many times when it uses Aveira unspecified, it means specifically thoughts of Znus. Specifically, Aveira in the Gemara often means Znus and Arayis. So, and we see that Einechem is associated with that. We find when Shimshon was going to marry a Plishti girl, and yeah, he was Megayer her, as the Rambam explains, and so on and so forth, but nevertheless, on the surface, it looked like he's intermarrying, and the Pasuk says that Shimshon says to his father, take her from me as a wife, because she's upright in my eyes. So we see that the eyes are associated with Arayis, with Znus. And if, yeah, you have the famous Mishnah in Sota that says just that, because Shimshon followed his eyes, therefore he was punished in the end, the Plishtim gouged out his eyes. where even though he's doing it the Shem Shemayim, he wants to be able to camouflage himself among the Plishtim and be able to attack them from the inside without them thinking that he's a Yid, and then there will be reprisals against the Yidin. And then it was Megayer who, as the Rambam says, but still so he relied on his own intuition and his own judgment a little too much. And so we see that that's associated with the word Eneth. Why should it be? So that's something else. So that what the Gemara has explained, the Yerushalmi mentions that point, that that's why we have in particular that Achre Levavchem v'Achre Einechem refers to, we said before, the Yerushalmi finds hints to all the Aseres Hadibris in Shema, and that's where we have the hint to Lo Sinaf is over there, because the Yerushalmi says, the eyes and the heart are the two brokers of Averis, because a person sees with his eyes and then starts desiring in his heart and then goes and does the Averis. Here the Gemara is taking a different tack on it. Here the Braisa that we're quoting is taking a different tack. We're saying Achre Levavchem and Achre Einechem are two unrelated things. One is thoughts of Apikursus, and the other one is thoughts of Znus.
You don't see, eyes don't stray after Apikorsis.
That's what we're saying. Levavchem is after Apikorsis. Einechem now refers to something completely different, namely Arayas. A person sees with his eyes, like Shimshon did, and it starts misleading him. And then Atam Zonim, then when it continues, Asher Atam Zonim Achareim, that you would stray after them, Zuhir Avodas Kochavim. That means thoughts of Avodah Zarah, V'cheinu Omer V'yiznu Achrei Abodim. As we find that the Jewish people going and worshipping Avodah Zarah is described as znus, described as swaying, like a married woman who has an affair. So the same way the Jewish people, we're supposed to be Hashem's exclusive spouse, and when a Yid goes and worships Avodah Zarah, then it's like a woman committing adultery. So therefore, so the Sacher Atam Zonim Achareim then refers to Hira Avodas Kochavim. So that's why, again, we have these fundamental six things in this parasha. That is why the Chachamim said, five things, according to the other Girsa, where the Marsha mentions that Yalkut Shimoni leaves out Minus, he says maybe Minus is the same as Hira Avodas Zarah, because both of them involve denials of fundamental ideas of Yiddishkeit. And then Marsha says that maybe the difference is Minus means Minus, that a person believes that Hashem doesn't exist at all. Hira Avodas Zarah would be where he thinks there's Hashem plus something else. So where do you get the five from? He says maybe Hira Avera and Hira Avodas Zarah both count as one for purposes of the Braisa. Okay, so that's that. So that's why we have that parasha in Shema. Next, the Gemara continues, Tanya, Sumcho Soimer, Kol HaMarich BeEchad Marichim Lo Yomo V'Shnoisav. A person extends out the word Echad to have Kavana in it, then his days and his years are lengthened. He'll live long for that. Omer of Achabayaku over Dalid. Specifically, it means that he should extend the Dalid. And why is that? Rashi explains, because if he extends the ches until he finished the word echad, it doesn't mean anything. Where if he extends the ches, if he says echad, then there's still no word yet. So there's no particular inyan, therefore, in extending the ches any longer than necessary. The main thing is to extend the dalid. Now, how do you actually extend the dalid? So they say, the Teimonim pronounce a dalid as v. So for them, it's actually very easy to. You can extend that sound as though you could say echad and extend it as long as you want, and taka it works. For us Ashkenazim, where we pronounce a dalet as d, then you can't really do that. You extend it too long, then it's sent out. It ever points out in Shulchan Aruch, then it sounds like it has a shva under it, or it sounds like it has a dovish in it, and neither one works, because the fact is it doesn't have a shva and it's rough. So rather, the Alter Rebbe says what we mean is to be marich bedalet means to be marich in the thought about it, as we're going to go on to say. And that it means la'arba ruchas ha-shamayim, that Hashem rules over all four corners of the world. So over all four directions. So therefore, the point is that marich be'echad means that a person has that idea in mind after he says the word echad. And by the way, the Alter Rebbe mentions, even if a person is not actually being marich in that, nevertheless, he should pause between that and baruch shem, because after all, there are two different aspects of accepting Hashem's malchus. In Tanya, the Alter Rebbe talks about Yad Yichudei Lord before the Tata, and so forth. So therefore, you have to have a slight pause between them anyway. So Omer of Asi, Uvavanchala Yachtif Beches. Now, it is true that you should extend the Dalet, either as we're saying in pronunciation, if you have that type of pronunciation, or in thought, if you don't. But nevertheless, the point is he shouldn't be hurrying through the ches. He shouldn't be, in order to extend the dalet, he's going to hurry through the ches. In other words, Rashi says, the fact is the ches has a comets, So Rashi over here calls it Patach because in Rashi's times, they pronounced Chometz and Patach much the same, the way Sfaradim do now. But the point is, Rashi says, don't pronounce it with a Chataf, meaning a Shva. Don't say Echd, because that's not how it's supposed to be pronounced either. It's supposed to be a Chometz. And the Gemara tells Rabbi so actually in this connection about Kol Amarich Be'echad Marich Amal Yom Vashnoisav, there's a mimer of the Friedrich Rebbe about this. Actually, it begins with that Dibra Maskel Kol Amarich Be'echad. He had it published when during his first visit to America. We know the Friedrich Rebbe visited America in 1929, 1930. Stayed most of a year in America, traveling all over the place to different Jewish communities. At one point, Yud Beis Yud Gimel Tammuz, was that you? He put out a kovetz of Maimorim. One of them begins Kol Amarich Be'echad. And he discusses the idea over there that the deeper idea about this Marith the Dalit and Ravad Shalai Yachta Faches is the Dalit we're saying represents that Hashem rules over Arba Ruchas HaShemayim. Therefore, that's a message to a Yid to realize no matter which direction he finds himself in, and of course, he's talking specifically to these Jews in America who are half assimilated already, that no matter which of the four directions a Yid finds himself in, he has to realize that he's there for a purpose. He's there to demonstrate that Hashem Echad and bring it into the world over there. On the other hand, Shalai Yachta Faches, on the other hand, a person shouldn't jump and slur through the ches quickly, because the ches is the idea that the Eibishter rules over the Zayin Rekiyim and the Oretz, the seven heavens and the earth. And the idea is, in other words, that a person has to keep in mind that why was Neshama sent down through the seven Rekiyim and down here to the earth? The Eibishter has a purpose for him in mind, and that purpose is, so therefore what we're saying is, once he keeps the ches long, automatically that will help him be Marech Bedalid, whereas the other way around, if he's Marech Bedalid but jumps over the Ches, means he's missing the essential point to realize why the Eibush to put him in this world in the first place. And therefore, you need both. So the Gemara tells, Rabbi Yumi have a Yosef Kamed Rabchir Ba'aba. Rabbi Yumi at one time was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rabchir Ba'aba. Chazya to have a Komarech Tuva. And Rabchir Ba'aba noticed that Rabbi Yumi was extending out the Dalid very long. Again, it could mean in pronunciation or it could mean in thought. But Rabbi Abba tells him, "Kibin da'am lichti l'maylo l'mato l'abba ruchas Hashemayim." Once you've thought in your mind about the Dalit, that you've made Hashem king over, you've acknowledged Hashem as king above and below, and the four cardinal directions, tuloy tzrichas, you don't need to keep extending it on any longer. At that point, you can stop saying Shema, you can stop saying Echad, and go on to Baruch Shem. Well, that may also be misdabbing with the tzibur, yeah. Marsha brings over here that so you do have to extend out the Dalit because again the Ches, I mean, because the Ches is to be Mamlech Hashem v'Shemayim v'Oretz, and the Dalit is for the Dalit Ruchas HaShemayim. In fact, that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. Rashi seems to say differently that it means that all of that is within the Dalit itself. So in fact, Marusha says, to tackle what was Rabbi Yumiya thinking that he's going so long, the fact is there are any number of kavonis and any number of sodas. There are just in Chassidus Chabad alone, there are thousands of pages that deal with various aspects of what Echad is all about. So Rabbi Yumiya was trying to have all those in mind. But again, Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba is telling him, the fact is you're not going to end up davening with the tzibur, so therefore you need to cut it a little bit short. You have the Zayin Rekiyim Ba'aretz and the Dalad Ruch HaSa'olam. With that, you've included all the directions. So at that point, stop and continue so that you can daven with the tzibur. In Shulchan Aruch, it mentions, by the way, and some people have this minhag, some people tack have the minhag to move their head in the different directions as they're saying the Dalit of Echad in order to tack demonstrate to themselves that they acknowledge all of this. Right, the Gemara says, Amr Rabbi Yosef, more din. The Gemara goes on to mention more dinim about how you're allowed to say Krishma. Amr Rabbi Yosef, prakton lo yikra Krishma. A person who is lying, prakton, is not allowed to say Krishma. Now, Rashi understands prakton to be that he's lying face up. He's lying flat on his back with his face up. There are Tosfos in other places in Shas and other Rishonim talk about the possibility that prakton, and the Rambam, for example, means that also that prakton would actually mean the other way around, that he's lying face down, he's lying on his stomach. So either way, he shouldn't say Kriyashma in that posture. So the Gemara asks, Krishma, Mikrohu de la Yikra. So what are you telling me? He's not allowed to say Krishma in that posture. Hal Mignit Shapu Dami. You're telling me that other than that, if he's not saying Shema, it's perfectly legitimate for him to lie like that. Vahar Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi lie it, Amanda Goni Aparkin. Don't we find that Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi would criticize or curse somebody who laid Aparkin? Now, why is that? According to Rashi that we're talking about face up, the problem is he might, as he's sleeping over there, he might get a kishui, he might get an erection, and it's going to be visible to everybody, and it would be a gnai, it would be an embarrassing thing. According to the Rambam's definition, that it means, according to the Rambam and other Rishonim, that it means that he's lying face down, then you have two problems. First of all, Eitz Yosef quotes from earlier Svarim that say there's two problems. Number one, that's the position a man lies in when he's having tashmish, so therefore that itself is a gnai to lie in that position. Number two, that he may now get wound up by contact with the bed, and again he's going to be motzi zer levatola. So the implication is that Bechlau, we're at the bottom page of my Aleph. So Bechlau to lie like that is a problem. Forget about saying Krishma. Why are we focusing Davka on Krishma? And the answer is Amri. So the answer, Migna kimatzli shapudam. Migna, it's true. As far as lying down, kimatzli shapudam. But if he's not completely flat on his back or flat on his stomach, he's turned over to one side, then that would be fine. Then you don't have these problems that we described when a person is lying in one or the other of those positions. Mikri, but when it comes to saying Krishma, Afa Gabda Matzli, even if he's inclined to one side, Nami Astira, then it would also be also because you don't want to be Makab, it's not right to be Makabal, oh Machas Shemayim, in a position like you're lounging around over there, like you're such an important person. You have to have a sense of bittul to the Eibishter. We're talking about Krishma. We're talking about any Krishma. Any Krishma, a person is saying in the morning to be Yotzeh, for example, before the Zman is over. A person is saying at night before, any of them. So the Gemara asks about Rabbi Yochanan Matzli Bakari. Didn't Rabbi Yochanan do just that? And the answer is, Shani Rabbi Yochanan, the Baal Basar have the difference is Rabbi Yochanan was heavy set. So therefore, so he couldn't, it was hard for him to sit up or to stand up. And therefore, he had a heter to turn a little bit on his side. So the Rambam phrases it, when a person is a Baal Basar, or otherwise when he's sick, for example, and you can see he's being Metzayer himself, he would like to sit up straight or to turn completely onto his side, but he can't because of his weight or whatever, then he has a heter to say Kriya Shema in that posture. But other than that, a person should sit up or stand up or do it in some other respectful posture. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. For Hey Chetren, the neshama of Mashiach includes all the neshamas of the whole Jewish people. That is why he has the power to take all the Jewish people out of Golus. As we know, the Rav Moshe Zakuto explains in his Pirush Hanzoya, Mashiach is the Yechida, so he's the every Yid has an individual Yechida. Here, Mashiach is the Yechida, the general, the all-encompassing Yechida of the whole Jewish people. Now, we know there are five levels in the neshama. You have nefesh, ruach, neshama, chayi, yechida. David HaMelech was zoicha to the nefesh. Eliyahu HaNavi was zoicha to the ruach. Moshe Rabbeinu to the neshama. So obviously we're going out of order chronologically. Adam HaRishon had the chaya, and Mashiach will have the level of yechida. On the flip side is also true. Every yid has a spark of the neshama of Mashiach in him, namely that every individual yid's yechida is a spark of that general yechida, which is the yechida that is most fully by Mashiach. Halachas, continuing on halachas of Ma'acholos Asuris. So you have people. The next halacha will skip. He describes something where they use an animal skin or an animal bladder or whatever to cover containers in the oven. Nobody does that nowadays. So onward, he says, you have sometimes there can be wells or rivers where you know that there are worms in them. So then you have to filter them first. And even b'dievet, if you don't, and you cook with that water, then you have to aser it. And the same thing, you wouldn't be able to soak anything in such water either because the worms would stick to it. So nowadays you have in the New York City water and maybe in some other places as well, you have these tiny little creatures called copepods, and you have a huge machloikas among the contemporary Rabbanim. Do those have to be filtered out or not? I believe that among the Rabbanim of Crown Heights themselves, there was actually an argument about that, whether you need to or not. Lamaisa, you see many people do one way and many people do the other way, but those who are choshesh to attack, you have the same problem as he's describing over here with the worms. And he's saying, when you do strain them, you have to strain them with something where even the tiniest worm or creature or what have you can't pass through it. Rav Chanan ben Nachash, Emetz, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Zakas Yisrael, Fichim Valam, Temetz, Shnemer, Adonai.